It has been a very challenging few days for our country, and in times like these, it can help to check in with friends. So that's what we did today. I reached out to friend of the show, Wajahat Ali, to hear what he's thinking. He's a writer and attorney based in Washington. Wajahat, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's been an eventful week.
Yeah, and it's only Wednesday. Walk us through how you've been processing everything this week so far.
White supremacy is a hell of a drug. And it seems to make a segment of America lose their minds or perhaps reveal the worst angels of themselves. And one would wish that the president of the United States, the commander-in-chief, the elected official who is supposed to represent 350 million of his citizens would be able to crush a meatball down the middle and say, I condemn white supremacy, an ideology of extremism that has caused terrorism, pain, and violence and betrays the values and principles of this country. But we have Donald Trump. And so we are making peace with
this. Why do you call white supremacy a drug?
Well, first of all, it's a Chappelle line. So I had to give a throwback to an old Chappelle sketch. But it lulls you in a strange way, doesn't it, right? It's the fuel, if you will, that has inspired so much of America in the sense that the founding of this country is based upon an ideology of supremacy, that is white supremacy. It has fueled slavery. It has fueled segregation. It has fueled racism. It has fueled bigotry. And so it's this nice, comforting drug that gives a segment of America a bit of relief, a bit of catharsis, a bit of righteous anger, and a convenient boogeyman, an enemy that they can always attack in order to make themselves feel great or safe or secure again.
I mean, I saw your tweet about having this uncomfortable conversation about white supremacy that America's avoided for nearly 300 years. And yet there's a sense that if it hadn't been for the live feed of the riot and the headline-grabbing death of Heather Heyer, maybe we wouldn't be talking about this right now, or at least the urgency wouldn't be there. Do you really think a meaningful national conversation, like not memes and opinions on social media, but a real sit-down to talk about white supremacy and slavery is coming soon?
No, but I remain hopeful. What will happen is that a lot of the people on the sidelines, Marco, a lot of my white moderate friends, some of my best friends are white moderate friends, didn't really take Islamophobia seriously or racism seriously. They thought, it's a thing of the past. It happens, you know, in the Deep South. There are small little, you know, examples of graffiti and vandalism. But with the election of Trump and the mainstreaming of modern hate and the fact that he's using the pulpit to essentially give defense and cover to part of his base, which are, let's be honest, white supremacists. The fact that it took him 2 days to condemn it. And then he did dog whistles on Twitter. And then he had this insane press conference yesterday, which was basically him. I don't know why anyone was shocked. I was not shocked at all. This has caused a lot of people to wake up and say, oh, my God, maybe our friends who are people of color, minorities, Muslims, immigrants, Mexicans, people with ovaries, maybe they were onto something. Maybe there is a problem. And you know what? We let it go for far too long, but this is a country that belongs to the future of our children. And the lowest hanging fruit is have those honest, tough conversations where we applaud
how do
Indiana
we move
Jones
on? How do we move on from this point and have those conversations?
Well, first and foremost, I think is acknowledgement that this is a problem. Number two, condemn it loudly. Number three, actually listen. Listen to Americans. Listen to Black Lives Matters. Listen to undocumented immigrants. Listen to Muslims. Fourth, I would say engage in each other's space. What I mean by that is pop the bubble, get out of your isolated cocoon, take your head out of the sand, and maybe if you've never talked to a Muslim, go to a mosque. If you're a Muslim who's never talked to a Jew, go to a synagogue. Meet each other. Talk to each other. And then what I would say is have frank, blunt conversations. Don't try to hold the punches, but really say, listen, I don't know much, but I want to learn. I hope you don't mind. I might offend you with some ignorant questions, but I come from a place of sincerity.
How do you talk to people who don't see the world the same way as you do?
You know, look, I went to an all-boys Jesuit Catholic high school where I was the token Muslim. I'm used to dealing with people, engaging with people who have completely different political, cultural, religious opinions. But I say there is values that unite us, and hopefully we can unite over this one simple idea that this country belongs to all of us, regardless of our race, ethnicity, or religion. When we were growing up, all of us always said, if it was World War II, we would do the right thing. Oh, if there's a crisis, we would be the hero. Oh, if anything went down, we would step up and be the protagonist of the narrative. This is that moment. This is that turning point. This is that crisis. This is where God or nature or destiny is staring you in the face and saying, stand up and throw down and be the hero.
So you're talking about this kind of maybe recent awareness or increased awareness of white privilege among whites. I kind of felt there was a cultural shift this week as well. Like Jimmy Fallon came out on Monday. Usually he's a late night punchline maven. He even kind of normalized Trump on his show last year. But Monday he was really taking on what happened in Charlottesville. He had this applause-free talk about the violence. And then last night featured Riz Ahmed, a British-Pakistani actor, performing a powerful slam poem about violence in the world, prejudice, and what he's feeling right now.
So listen. Terrorism isn't caused by religion or an old school vision of Islam. It's against the Quran, and it's a new innovation caused by mashup situations. That's what makes them turn to arms. The problem is modern, and it's all local factors. Dictatorships, injustices, and wars cause fatwas. So when you sour times, please allow me to vouch for mine. Bitter taste in my mouth, spit it out with a rhyme. Ayo, I'm losing my religion to tomorrow's headlines. But it's fine.
Do you think something changed this week culturally?
Dude, the guy who plays beer pong with celebrities was more presidential than the president. Let's just take a moment to absorb that. And my friend Riz is a great guy. I knew Riz before he was famous. I know Riz after he's famous. And what you saw on Jimmy Fallon with him reciting his powerful poem, Sour Times, is Riz throughout. And the fact that Jimmy gave Riz, a Muslim, a son of Pakistani immigrants, that type of platform to recite that poem that Riz wrote actually after 9/11 really speaks volumes. And I think Jimmy Fallon, the guy who jostled Trump's hair and had fun with the dude, he's the one who delivered a very sober, sincere condemnation of the violence, does give us some hope that even the jesters and the clowns and the people who were sitting on the sidelines realize that, wait a minute, I have a platform, I have an opportunity. It's my time to throw down and speak up. And that was very, very encouraging.
Wajahat Ali is a writer and attorney based in Washington, D.C. Waj, thanks very much for your time and your thoughts.
Thanks so much for always inviting me.
Yeah, when the late night network comedians start getting serious and featuring slam poets who used to only be on HBO, you know something's going on. Anyway, we'll see where this takes us. But remember the various voices on the show today who said, despite Martin Luther King Jr.'s optimism, the arc of the moral universe doesn't bend toward justice all by itself. That's where we leave you today. From the Nan and Bill Harris studios at WGBH here in Boston, I'm Marco Werman, back with you tomorrow.